Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Hansen Technologies results briefing. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Andrew Hansen, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Travis, and welcome everyone to the Hansen Technologies first half financial 2021 results. I'm joined here today with Graeme Taylor, Chief Financial Officer, and Head of our Investor Relations, Malcolm Nettman. They'll join me today in going through the slide presentation we've released to the marketplace. Clear at the front of it, look, we're very excited about the results. It has been a very strong financial and operational performance. We've had some great strategic wins. We continue to show resilience and growth and a very, very bright future to our company in what has been under a cloud of COVID in the year. Let me kick off. Look, any questions, we'll actually do those at the end, and we'll ask you for questions. Certainly an important notice. There's some explanations in there, so please take time to read those to understand where we're going. Just quickly on the agenda, the plan will be to do an overview and the results highlights, and then we'll get to dividend and outlook, and then followed by questions. Look, just the history of Hansen. I think it's always important just to remind people who we are, but we are a global company which originally was founded back here in Australia back in 1971, and now with about 85% of our revenues overseas, so we're a very proud company to have left the shores of Australia. Basically, we provide technology which we own, serving the gas, electricity, water, and communications industries. We develop and implement purpose-built software, which really enables our customers to bring to market new products, services, then build them, et cetera. In all cases where we own the IP, we're sitting around about 580+ customers now in 80 countries, and we largely deal with tier 1 and tier 2 customers, which gives us that great resilience part of our business because they are not fledgling and ongoing. The other point is we're very well diversified against regions and verticals. With software in 80 countries, to have the verticals we've got at the moment now, no customer more than 5%, it just shows we're very, very diversified against currencies, et cetera. We think we're in a fantastic position. Our mission is to further grow best-in-class core business through aggregating mature, entrenched, and predictable businesses. I suppose everyone's got a mission statement. That's ours. Basically, I want to touch more on probably the growth and the scope of other verticals as our business is one of the other avenues we've got. We've built a business which has a great foundation across the global markets at the moment now, and we're trying to find other verticals which actually can marry in with what I was explaining as the gas, electricity, and water markets we've got at the moment now. Our mission clearly is to drive through that global experience we've actually got. We're a very fortunate company. Actually of note, we've actually only got one expat who works in the company, even though we have people, foreigners working overseas, but we only support one expat. Largely our business in Finland is run by Finnish people, Norway is run by Norwegians, New Zealand by New Zealand, and we're very, very proud that the Hansen playbook works out very, very well for people to follow the Hansenization program around the world. Hansenization of the aggregated businesses has been really important to us. If we dart back in my nearly 30 years of being at Hansen, where we've done probably 30 or 40 acquisitions, we have a playbook which we call Hansenization. It's the way in which we measure, we run, we report on our organization. We know, hence, when we do acquisitions, we can quickly bring that Hansenization, and we can actually teach people very quickly the way to run their business. Hence, every business we've bought, we've actually taken on to higher opportunities and certainly make a lot more money than what they were doing in the past. Probably the other thing is we're highly disciplined in our approach, and largely that's being about that, being patient to find the right opportunities, the best for our shareholders and stakeholders inside the business. Just moving to the key headlines. Look, great to see the revenues up. In answering to a lot of our shareholders to talk in constant currency, because we are such a global organization, the number of currencies we deal with, I think dealing with the constant currency allows people to truly understand where our growth's coming from. Just a bit of a backdrop to that, Whilst we're up 2%, you will recall in previous presentations, there was some business we chose not to renew, which really had a disproportionate amount of call centre activities in it. And if in fact we were not that business, if we added it back in, actually our growth is close to 6% going forward. So we think it's been a fantastic year on a constant currency basis. EBITDA, the true measurement of Hansen, you know, we're not a speculative stock. This is a mature organisation and which makes money, and our EBITDA up 44% in the corresponding period, and not only NPAT up 77% to $31.6 million. Clearly, the stickiness of our customers is what's actually enabled that as part of our business, and as we always try to outline, that you know, 97% of all of our revenues come from where we own the software. And we're also very proud that we have great visibility, you know, 12 months out ahead of where our business is going to, which is always around about 95% of visible from where our revenues are coming from. I know that Graham will talk a bit more in detail on some of the results, but once again, just so proud of the results in against the COVID-19 backdrop for a lot of organisations where we've been able to navigate that going through. In the continue on the headlines, underlying earnings per share up 77%. I think that the main thing, a lot of shareholders on the call now, a lot of people which follow Hansen, is because we are a very strong cash generative organisation. Significant reduction of debt, so meaning that our net debt down to 95%, a reduction of $20 million. Is a great sign. And once again, I think, Graham, you'll probably wish to talk more onto that. And important, increasing our dividend to 5 cents. This is our shareholders' money. And if we've not got better uses of the money and we think paying down some debt and working capital, we should be returning it. And so we're happy to increase the dividend for our shareholders. Graham, would you like to take on talking about the first half and some of the details, please?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Look, first of all, on behalf of the board and Andrew and myself, you know, there's a lot of people that work very, very hard to deliver these results. We're really very fortunate to have a wonderful team of people across the globe that have made such a strong contribution to the business during the first half, working very, very strongly from their kitchens, living rooms and wherever else to make sure our customers have been well serviced through the period. So it's a real credit to everyone out there, the delivery teams and all the people working very, very hard to ensure this outcome. So first of all, let me extend congratulations to the Hansen team. As we look at the results, you know, revenue, as Andrew mentioned before, you know, it's great to see some revenue growth when you look at the position for the business. And look, it is in difficult terms, but some of these wins have been quite significant for us. We start to understand the business and understand that revenues are up 1.2% on a constant currency basis. We look at our APS growth, and we understand that that's also translated through the business because we're starting to see some very good impact savings, in the sense that we've got our interest and our debt levels down. We're in lower positions of margin on our interest, and we're seeing those translate into some real savings for us. As Andrew mentioned before, dividends are up 5 cents. It is one of those things where we're able to return some cash to shareholders because of our strong growth in our cash flows, and we really like to reward shareholders wherever we possibly can. So, looking back to the underlying EBITDA and understanding where we are there, we have had some margin improvement within our business. And that's really come from that previous investment in our low-cost development centres, savings within our integration within the Sigma business, and really turning back to that strong productivity that we've been able to maintain through this first half of 2021. It's really great to see that in such a difficult COVID environment that productivity's been maintained very, very well. As I mentioned before, the strong pay down of debt really does true this business up. We've got great support from our banks. We're seeing profitability across the globe, with profit here in Australia, all throughout the US and Europe, which has led to a tax rate returning to that typical 24% that we projected at the 30th of June 2020. We expect to see, you know, a mixed bag with tax rates. It's a little bit of an uncertain position with the US and so forth going forward, but still 24% across the business is probably where we expect our tax rates to remain. Okay, talking a little bit more to the debt position, just very, very quickly. Look, with such a wonderful cash flow position that the business finds itself in, particularly again with COVID-19, we have not experienced any issues with working capital or payment from our customers. We've continued to see great cash flows in the business. In fact, it's great to be able to get to this typical position at a half year, where in past years we've perhaps seen a little bit of a build-up in our working capital beyond the current levels. And we've been able to manage the business very, very strongly to ensure that that hasn't happened, and the conversion to cash has been very good. That's allowed us to pay down debt and, you know, really brought to play the fact that we have some strong available liquidity to service the business going forward, and a really strong capital structure to take into the second half. You know, we really want to emphasise this point. You know, Hansen has an unbelievable position on its fiscal strength. The cash flows, the strong profitability is something that's not just a flash in the pan. It's been part of Hansen's business for many, many years, and continues to mean that Hansen's in a really good position, not requiring equity injection to get through this difficult period, and in fact, really trading incredibly strongly through the period. Look, moving and talking specifically to cash flow, many during the pandemic have looked to raise equity as a means of securing their future. Hansen hasn't had to do that. Our strong business fundamentals have continued to secure Hansen's future. And I think it's really important that you work through that cash flow, and I don't propose to go through line by line, that, you know, the really strong business fundamentals come out there. Good working capital management, cash invested sensibly in product development, really strong physical cash flow generation allowing us to service our debt with ease, and in fact continue to strengthen our position with our banks, and of course return some of that cash to shareholders as we look to our future and the cash requirements the business will have. So look, I'll expand a little bit further later on debt, but I'll take this opportunity now to hand over to Malcolm, who will go through and have a bit of a discussion on the key achievements in the half.
Thanks, Graham. Yeah, something we've shown both during this latest global crisis, but even earlier in the global financial crisis, is resilience of our business, creating highly predictable revenues. Now, this is, as mentioned earlier, this is driven in large part by our long-term customer relationships, with most of our customer relationships being greater than 10 years. So not only do we have a base of business resilience to protect us on the downside, we've also seen robust growth through this pandemic. Because I think it's fair to say all of this is possible through our sector thought leadership and expertise, with an executive team with over 100 years of expertise and experience in communications and IT and management, which is all resulting in low customer losses and significant new strategic customer wins, which we'll talk about shortly. Looking more broadly, we see three key achievements in the first half that we think it's worth bringing the market's attention to. Firstly, continued significant customer wins, and this is so important that we'll talk about this in more detail in the next slide. Secondly, significant technology and organisational investment. Now, this has been through, as mentioned earlier, our development centres, so there's been significant recruitment of new developers and our India and Vietnam development centres to support our future growth. Secondly, cloud relevance for our products. So all of our products are available on-prem, SaaS solutions, public cloud or Hansen-provided cloud, which gives ultimate choice for our customers. As we've mentioned earlier, we have a head of strategic sales who's driving key customer relationship development and sales effort to grow that cash generative core. And as we've also mentioned earlier, our M&A team, who is focused on searching and screening for all relevant aggregation opportunities. And we'll talk about that in more detail in later slides as well. And then finally, the key achievement in H1 21 is the sort of accelerated increase in our profitability. We touched on this earlier, but we're really proud of our continued positive momentum in EBITDA margins, which has been driven by the continued rationalisation of the company's cost base. So I'll now hand over to Andrew to discuss our recent wins and impact on organic growth.
Thank you, Malcolm. I think it's probably just worth touching on, and we've actually articulated these slides anyway, is the categories of where our strategic wins have actually been coming from. There's no doubt the worldwide adoption of 5G is going to be a major game changer. And understand, most telcos are still working out their commercialisation of what they're doing. But it is leading to most telcos to look at, as they're rolling out 5G, to understand and look at their technology stack and how they're going to support products and services, the Internet of Things, which they've not actually been doing up until now. And I suppose, you know, we are looking forward to closing some significant deals in the future. We're certainly partnering with a lot of our customers on how they're solving it now. I suppose of note, you know, we don't normally go into a lot of details around our customers, but to the Dish deal, a very significant player in the US market, and they had a ground-up approach. So they were looking for the best or brand-new technology to support their business going forward. And that win was really quite significant for us, given the fact, you know, there's a lot of competition out there, but to be chosen the best in breed a number of times as we are now, we're very, very happy with it at the moment now. Certainly, smart energy. Smart energy is certainly the adoption of new ways, power, and how we're going to be consuming it, and wins like with Western Power, and the adoption of smart energy is going to keep on changing things. Regulation adaption, this is a constant. There's different countries around the world look to have macro changes into their businesses and how they're going to be dealing with regulation. You know, we've been involved in regulatory changes in the Scandic regions, and the Australian marketplace opens up, et cetera. And it also brings under focus for those who look at the overseas market and what happens in Texas, which, you know, the way the regulations have been running in Texas at the moment, that's probably bringing into question, since Texas disconnected themselves from the national grid some time. So they all become opportunities for Hansen because of the way our systems actually work in with people. And then you get down to renewables. Now, renewables and smart energy are a little bit combined, but solar power, you know, we see Victoria's just announced probably the biggest lithium battery storage facility in the world going at the moment now. And once again, for Hansen, they just become more chargeable events, the type of energy and the way you're consuming or putting it back into the grid. So we have extreme confidence the way the organic part of our business is continuing to grow with, but more importantly, how we keep on working with our customers and not giving them a reason to think to go somewhere else, that we're able to solve their future today. M&A, look, I know M&A is an important one for everyone, the company, those that followed Hansen. We're never been a double or triple digit growth organisation. We've had an organic company growing, you know, 3 to 5%, but some of our growth does come from acquisitions, clearly, which has been very good. So we have got a dedicated M&A team. It's interesting, with COVID, deal flow has not necessarily slowed down. And so we have been able to, from afar, start to assess some of the opportunities being presented to us. And clearly, as things get closer, and we will be making announcements doing it. But I just wanted to give a bit more colour to our M&A team and what they're actually doing. Clearly, it is a very structured approach and always has been highly disciplined. It was part of my career before joining Hansen, so we've never really strayed too far from what works from us. You know, I'm not a career CEO, guys. I'm an owner-operator sort of thing, so you've got to eat what you kill. So I have a lot of focus on making sure the businesses which we acquire and we aggregate to Hansen make perfect sense. But we do have always quite specific criteria. We do want to be in robust and mission-critical verticals. We like to be close to the cash where the business is operating, whether that's actually generating the products or the services, or the billing. That's our area we like to be. We don't like to get down really too far into the network, et cetera. We want to own IP. We think it's fundamental for a company like Hansen to enjoy 10-plus year relationships with customers. To own IP gives us a clear roadmap to the investment and our investment approach to all of our products. I think it's really important. So ownership of IP is fundamental to us. We are a global company, so regional expansion and leverage of our business. You know, we have legal teams, finance teams, admin, IT, sales, marketing, spread around the globe, and that is the foundation we go to. So as we bring a business on board, we get some of those efficiencies from those systems and processes we've built. So hence, we know coming out of COVID, the opportunities exist. We do have a global team able to execute these transactions. We do look for complementary applications. We are looking for that brother, sister to what we do, not necessarily a second, third or fourth cousin. Other verticals. Other verticals has always been an interest to us, looking at the fundamentals of our business, and we have explored a number of them because we believe that foundation stone I talk about in Hansen, that we could look at another vertical to take use of those systems and processes we've got. So we are looking at transaction-based opportunities or subscription-based opportunities because we're so used to dealing at such large volumes. Anything to do with volumes and complexity is good for us because we think we can actually also provide some thought leadership to those parts of the areas. And we do like dealing with mature and predictable Tier 1 and Tier 2 customer bases. You know, Tier 3, the 4s, the startup organisations, you can invest a lot of money in those companies, but not to see them actually survive in the longer term. So we've always done that. As far as you know, the structured approach and identifying, you'd understand that we're running a database of about 400 companies which we actually know and we actually follow. We do create really basically that funnel. And we are looking at our competitors. We're looking at evolution. We're looking at technology the whole time. And therefore, it comes down to the basic fundamentals to us is looking for the owner-operator business. We do love a potential carve out of a large organisation, which makes a lot of sense for us. And also when there's owned by private equity. And there's a bit of movement of private equity firms, certainly in mature businesses like ours. We're seeing a correction in the tech and probably it should happen anyway, but basically Hansen's not part of it. Hansen makes cash and I think some of those private equity companies, as they start to see their businesses and where their trajectory is, will provide lots of opportunities. So, as I said, I think I've always used the word highly disciplined in our approach to acquisitions, and I've got an extremely talented, dedicated team of people I've been working for a long time, which are able to execute those plans. So, Graeme, might let you want to touch on dividends, please.
Sure, thanks, Andrew. Capital management more broadly, I think really we're at a position where not a lot's changed in from a policy standpoint with respect to capital management. You know, clearly the board and the senior executive team look at how capital is utilised and what we do within the business to ensure that we're well placed and the business is growing strongly into the future. As mentioned before, you know, we continue to pay down debt. From a capital management point of view, that's really resetting the balance sheet and allowing us to use debt for future anticipated growth. I think the thing I'd like to really point out at this juncture is that when you're considering capital management, you've got to put it into the context of a proven management team and board with a history of strong fiscal responsibility. And we're continuing down that path. Our strong cash flow generation really has now got us in a position where we're seeing unprecedented support from our banking consortium. There's no question about what level of debt we can raise. People are out there offering us money all the time, and certainly at the record low interest rates that we're seeing in the market at the moment, debt certainly seems to be the way we'd go going forward. So we're really very well placed to continue with the growth of our business. Healthy levels of debt between 3 and 3.5% is something that Hansen can very easily service. And in fact, you know, we are looking at capital management around acquisitions specifically. different acquisitions require a different capital approach possibly. And so that flexibility is really, really important. And the board keeps considering these things as we look to the future. The dividend, look, we've mentioned a number of times before, 5 cents appears to be the right level at the moment, returning higher levels of cash than we have in the past, but also responsibly balancing that between what we expect to be doing sometime in the future. So really, capital management remains the same, but look, I have to say from a CFO's perspective, we're very, very well placed to use our capital to continue the growth of our business. Okay, Andrew, back to you for the outlook.
Yeah, they give you the good slides to talk to. So, look, the outlook. I think by the tone of this and the tone over the last number of years, we're very extremely confident about the future of our business. You know, it's a great business. It's a predictable business, and we love what we actually do. It's on that basis. We just want to update our guidance. You know, this is all under, you know, market conditions around COVID-19, but we want to update our guidance now to revenues of 295 to 300 on a constant currency basis. And probably more importantly, the underlying margin, as Graham's touched on, our EBITDA margin in the higher echelons of what we've sat before. But Graham, as you know, we truly are seeing the benefits of some of that infrastructure investment we've actually made, eliminating some of that lower margin business, Graham, I think also, which we've eradicated from, et cetera, the Sigma contribution, our management. So it's really nice to see that there will be some, I think, some costs will come back into the organisation. But I think everyone would know now, you know, we've successfully run the business now with 12 months remotely. And as Graham touched on, the team of people working from their homes and their home offices or their car, et cetera, have done a brilliant job. But travel might come back into it, but probably never at the same levels. I noticed myself, you know, closing deals with executives around the world is just so commonplace now, whereas once upon a time it would be, you know, over a meal, it would be face-to-face, that it's now acceptable doing it from, you know, my study to their study in their homes around the world. So whilst some costs will come into the business, but we're very, very happy the way we see the structure of our business for the medium term. The other thing which we wanted to give highlight to the business, we've now talked about the future of our business, but there's been lots of questions from our investment community about our long-term financial questions, which we just wanted to really probably talk about. So we have, as a board and the executive management, has signed up now to the target of the 2025 year of $500 million. And we're not seeing that's ambitious at all, because if you look at the last 5 years, our CAGR has been at 23%. So if you map in our organic growth and that, we're talking about growing at half the pace we've been doing over the last 5 years to hit a target of $500 million. And that's supported by organic growth, it's supported by our approach to M&A. But I think it's just fair that, you know, the systems and the processes are all in place now to undertake that. And as I said, it's a very conservative approach, since it's less than half of what we've been doing in the last 5 years. So I hope that gives some confidence to the investors on the call, investors listening to this, of why you're investing in Hansen and coming on the journey with us. It's very, very exciting ahead of us.
Just before handing back to Andrew.
Put your hand up, you'd like to have a chat.
No, look, as a relatively new member of the team, it has been hugely impressive to see what Hansen delivers, whether it's a strong financial performance, including resilience and growth, the best-of-breed technology, the strategically significant customer wins sort of really underpinning that organic growth story, the structured team process, and really significant opportunities for acquisitive growth, and finally, and most significantly, and Andrew's just touched on, the visibility and strong confidence in our long-term growth and profitability outlook is really makes it an exciting time at the moment. So I'll hand back over to Andrew to close the presentation before some Q&A.
Michael, thank you. And I hope everyone's enjoyed the fact we've mixed up with a few more people chatting rather than me just boring everyone the whole time. Look, it's probably been a great half of the company, and there's no doubt about that. We're very, very happy for everyone being involved, and our appreciation to all the stakeholders in the business, that being the shareholders, but our staff, etc., on the journey we've gone. We've been having some strategic wins, and which will drive some strong organic growth for the company, which we're looking forward to with some of our products. The M&A approach, we're very confident on our approach to M&A going forward at the moment now, hence happy to put out what our internal targets are to our shareholder base. The second half is looking strong, and you know, we're very confident that we'll comfortably meet or exceed the previous guidance going forward. And I think going back to that point, you know, that confidence long-term outlook of our business and the markets which we support, we are issuing that $500 million in revenues, and how we're going to grow there is all well thought out and planned, and we hope that everyone appreciates the candor and the openness in this presentation today. So on that note, that concludes. I've got to say, if there is by chance any questions, I'd be happy to take those questions. Travis, you'd like to take the questions for me, please.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star then two. If you're using a speakerphone today, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question comes from Gary Sheriff from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Andrew, Graham, Malcolm. Just a few questions from me. Firstly, I just wanted to isolate the like-for-like sales and EBITDA growth, Andrew, because you did mention that if you excluded that call centre contract that you guys exited, the revenue growth would have been closer to 6%. Just seeing if you could also maybe tell us what the EBITDA contribution was last year. Was that loss-making? I'm just trying to get a better sense of isolating the like-for-like sales growth and EBITDA growth.
Could
you strip that out?
Good question, Gary, but it was not a loss-leading part, but it was certainly the lower echelons of acceptable EBITDA margin of the business. So, you know, you're only talking a number of millions of dollars. It would not have had a material change when you look at the overall profitability of the company, and we haven't really disclosed it. But you've not lost leading, Gary, but not high margin business, because as you imagine, call centre business is fickle and low margin.
Yep. Okay. No trouble. I mean, you have won a bunch of new contracts, which is great. Just trying to get a sense on how we should phase that revenue growth over the next 12 months. And secondly, wanted to check around, you mentioned low customer losses. Do you give us anything on churn or anything a bit more specific? I'm just trying to get a sense on, yes, understand revenue was flat generally, but if you X out the that call centre contract, it's obviously better. But I'm just trying to get a sense of the back book growth and also churn, just to try and reconcile what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, churn has always been very low. It's sub 1%. You know, it's, you know, I'm not sure what it was exactly, a bit more than a handful maybe of customers. And that case is often due to a merging, you know, there's a bit of merging in some of our customer base in the Scandics at the moment now, but it's not a material change to our business. As far as, Gary, you know, the revenues from our customers, as you always know, we have a mixed blend. I know we've discussed this with you, but for everyone on the call, the way we price our customers, so we get normally a license fee, and the license fee is normally aimed at the size of the business and how many customers or how many meters they're actually doing. And that license fee, we try instinctively normally to turn that into an annuity stream. So that normally does not, a new customer coming on board does not have a major material change into our business. We have implementation. The implementation of our software, you know, the average install probably is close to 12 months to install the software. And so we would have a flow of revenues coming through, which is a bit disproportionate for, you know, 12-month period when the implementation. But in some cases, because the Hansen, you know, playbook is always try to marry our pricing in with customers and how it works for them, in some cases we elect to actually almost fund it for them and put that part of the annuity stream rather than some of the funds up front. Then you've got the normal maintenance and support. Once the system goes live, Gary, we then have people paying us support and maintenance for the application. Then the last bucket is the professional services. And the professional services could be, because Hansen provides all things, it can be on-premises, they're using their own hardware. It could be they're in our private cloud, or they could be in the public cloud, or it could be a SaaS offering. And so those professional services are often built around those applications and on how they're actually done. But in all, Gary, there's no... all customers will be different. It probably just aggregates out, hence to that sort of growth which we're getting into the organisation. But yeah, we are mindful. We do have some customers, Gary, which have a different balance sheet requirement, may want to give us more money up front, and others want to have an operational one. So there's no single rule to the way Hansen does it, but that's by the nature of our industry. You know, I certainly look at some companies which just have a much cleaner pricing plan, but for ours, we like that flexibility we build into it and that flexibility which we offer our customers.
Yep, okay, got you. Just talking about your 2025 500 mil target, I mean, your historical growth rate organically looks like it's, you know, well under 5%. So the driver is going to be M&A. Love to hear a bit more about where you think that those verticals will really be focused on, and maybe just remind us around your, I guess, multiples criteria from an EBITDA perspective. I know Sigma was done, I think, at about between eight and nine times historical EBITDA. If you could give us some more colour on that, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, look, we're not really highlighting any specific. There's no doubt during COVID, there's probably been a little bit more focus on what we're looking for, of where in country we have adequate support for our ambitions. So the idea of going to some of the regions where we don't have, you know, good executive management or finance or IT teams, et cetera. So we would probably, or you could look to more in our established markets for that further consolidation, what we're going. Multiples, look, that's always a debated item, to tell you the truth. Look, you wouldn't blame me for saying I think that Hansen has been undervalued in the marketplace for a company with its history and profitability and cash flow general. I don't necessarily understand our multiple. That is problematic a little bit for us, Gary, because, you know, buying good businesses, it's hard to buy good businesses. So there's a bit of competition because private equity are able to pay a lot more than that at the moment now. But we're hoping that you know, those assets, so the multiple always, we're really aiming more for an earnings accretive asset than anything else. And in some cases, the predictability of their revenues or the synergistic nature of their revenue will pay more versus in the past we've paid as low as, you know, three times because it's not as predictable or it's more riskier business. So, you know, I think you'd probably say averages of eight or nine. The advantage has always been, and even if you went back to the Sigma business, which I think we bought at, you know, probably at 10 or 11 times, but based on the earnings we're getting out of the business now, look how earnings accretive it is. So no golden rule, but we have a lot of focus in those criteria I've already spoken to. It's all about, you know, owning IP, the criteria. But we also, a lot of the work we do when looking at an acquisition for everyone on the call is not really historically looking at the business. When we're buying a business we intimately know, it means that we know how to model the financials of the business. And in fact, we spend most of our time in due diligence modelling what we're going to do in the first 90 days and how our business would actually look in our ownership and how much money we can make out of the business. And hence, we do turn the business around very quickly.
Got you. Last two questions quickly. Sorry. Buying some private equity ownership, you mentioned on slide 15 of your deck. I guess investors are typically cautious around PE owners selling assets to listed players simply because most of the cost outs have been done already. What gives you that confidence to purchase from PE? And I guess the second question, cost out from those development centres, is that largely all factored in now? Should we expect any more margin improvement from those initiatives from here? Thank you.
Private equity, Gary, are always a bit tricky to buy because they do run a campaign. An owner of a business or even a conglomerate, their criteria is not only price, but who's going to own the business. So they always spend a lot more time wanting to know about culture, you know, keeping the management, what we're going to do with the software, etc. Private equity is just price-based. But that's right, mate, I'm price-based as well. So why do we get confidence of private equity? Because we are still the natural owner of some of these assets. And that's the point about it. It's, you know, rather than actually handballing off to another private equity firm in this sort of space, we are approached by private equity at the moment now. Clearly they think the valuations, they look at our valuation and naturally enough want more for their asset, but it's an ongoing discussion. But, you know, we've got to look at all of them. As far as Graham, you might have talked to, but I think we will continue to wash through the efficiencies. We've been super impressed And just can I remind everyone, the whilst we talk about the low-cost development centres, it's not about low cost to us much as availability of staff. The Indian marketplace has millions of IT graduates. It's a massive, massive market, bigger than any other market we are in the world. And so therefore, when we're hiring people out there, the calibre and the depth of people applying for jobs is second to none. And whilst, yes, it is a lower cost there, but there's a lot of pressure in India at the moment now. So we're not the only one to have woken up to availability of great, talented staff. And there is wage pushes, but it's coming off, you know, a fair run-up at the moment now. So I would, do we, demonstrable changes? No, but we are well and truly going to continue to focus on using some of those development centres going forward into our business because of the success and the trajectory of our projects we receive from them. It's very, very, we're very, very happy with it.
I think there's only two things I'd add very quickly, Gary. Sigma, as you know, we bought from private equity, and I think there's no doubt that we've been able to show how we bring a business out of that environment and Hansenise it and generate further growth and certainly greater margins. There's no doubt that we have a track record in doing that. You know, and I think from a margin point of view, look, margin's always subject to circumstances at the time. You know, we've got critical mass now in these centres. We'll continue to keep looking and investing. But really the fundamental in Hansen, we have great customer relationships, and so we always have some core people in country and, you know, holding their hands, giving them the thought leadership, making sure that we're remaining relevant. So it is a balance, and we see that balance as being extremely important.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Greg. We're never going to be faceless in front of our customers.
Correct.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you. The next question comes from Nick Burgess from Ord Minnett. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, gentlemen. Two quick questions from me, please. So you mentioned, Andrew, the potential for new verticals outside of energy and telco. Are there any obvious candidates there? Just a little bit more detail of the sorts of things you might be considering.
I don't want to create any... G'day, Nick. How are you, mate? In fact, probably Gary's asked all the questions you're going to ask. You've only got two left on your page.
Yeah, that's right.
I think, there's some financial services market because it's aligned to what we do, we're interested in. We like diversity. So we actually like regional diversity rather than global sometimes because we think that actually plays to some of our strengths. So the financial sectors, healthcare sector is another one. But I don't really want to drill into too much detail because my competitors might be on the phone and start looking at some of them anyway. But look, there'll be no surprise to you, Nick, but there are some verticals which we think look a little bit like our other verticals at the moment now. But that'd be
okay,
financial services and healthcare.
Okay, thank you. That helps. And just a detailed question, Graham. Just if I look at the segmental report by region, the Americas region in terms of revenue looks like it's gone down 10% this half on the prior corresponding period. Is that the call centre and a bit of currency headwind as well? Is there anything else in that Americas region that we should be aware of?
Yeah, certainly the main two. I think also in one division of our business, we had some upgrade business that occurred as well. There is ongoing upgrades within that utility space, but I think in the previous corresponding period was when they really kicked off with a fair bit of gusto, and so, you know, things have come back a little bit based on that sort of trajectory. But look, nothing fundamentally wrong there. Of course, as Andrew mentioned, that call centre business that we talked to, you know, at 30th of June, you know, was circa, you know, $10 million annual revenue. So it's not a tiny customer.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much. That's all from me.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Paul Middleton, private investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, congratulations on the result firstly, but just wondering with the EBITDA margin, you're targeting 33 to 35%. How does that marry up with a pre-AASB 16 basis, please?
Look, I think the change in accounting standards, as I think you're alluding to, with now the changes of that, that impacts our margin around 2.5% to 3%. So, you know, that has tickled our margin up a little bit as a result of, you know, taking interest and so forth down below the line. I think that's where your question's focused.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, I was wondering how it sort of compared with the previous target, which I think you had around 25 to 30%. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I think that there's a couple of things that are coming in there. Yes, we're getting a little bit of a benefit from IFRS 16, there's no doubt. Look, we're sitting, I think, at the half on a constant currency basis at around 36.9%. You know, we're taking a conservative view on our long-term outlook, sort of suggesting that, you know, with a little bit of more travel kicking back in, some of the other things that we're doing, we're probably going to see a couple of points deterioration come back into the business as some of these costs start to come back in a little bit. But Andrew, you know, alluded to the fact, you know, businesses and certainly our business is going to be very different as we move forward. You know, even in these relaxed times at the moment, we're allowed to bring a few more people back into the office. You know, we're seeing, you know, less than 50% of the staff back in the office working effectively from home. So, you know, our cost base will continue to change a little bit, but probably balance out around that 34-35% mark.
Yep. And can I just ask, just on the employee expenses, which came down, I think, about $9 million, how much of that is rationalisation of the Sigma workforce? Any sort of idea on that?
Yeah, we probably don't look at that way because we integrate our businesses so quickly, to tell you the truth. And so it's actually, you know, let's be honest, if you've got two accountants in the same country and we only need one. So there's no doubt some of the reduction has come on board. You wouldn't say it's Sigma specific, but company-wide specific. I've probably not done enough analysis of the numbers, Graham, but you'd imagine a lot of it's come from what a lot of organisations did at the start of COVID. You know, taking people out of offices has actually slowed some of the admin requirements. You know, we received some benefits of our financial and new HR systems we put into bed, streamlining some things, the Sigma, some of the management not required, come from a little bit everywhere. Probably.
Yeah, look, I think rather than talk numbers of people, you know, I think you can work out when you've got a CEO of a Sigma business that's turning over, you know, circa $75 million Canadian dollars, a chief financial office, a head of HR, an admin office manager, a legal counsel, they're all big dollar value people. And, you know, they're no longer with us at the moment. And so that's generated significant savings at that executive level. I think you've got to look at this cost-saving question in the backdrop, though, of initiatives that Hansen had launched well before Sigma. You know, that was looking at Vietnam and how we were going to look at our driving our cost of delivery down more generally. And certainly, I think Andrew spoke in previous meetings about this, where unfortunately, you've got to make an initial investment. You know, you've got to have duplicate staff. You've got to train them. You've got to do all of that. And we're seeing some of that cost out now through this COVID period as we're starting to settle into a more normal, inverted commas, delivery mechanism. You know, Darren Mead, the head of our delivery team, has really worked hard to get these teams working effectively through Vietnam and India. And again, that's generating some great cost out for us. So, you know, it's a combination of things.
Yeah, okay. So it's a bit of a rebasing in the employee expenses.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you once again. To ask a question, please press *1 on your phone. The next question comes from Paul Rasmussen from Integral. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Andrew, it's a great presentation and congratulations to you and your team on results, and it seems to me I've been with you guys for many, many years now, through the thin years and the lean years and now the better years. So congratulations to you and obviously to your dad as well. Now, what I wanted to ask you is, can you do me a favour? Can you get into Telstra and and take over their billing system for me, please?
Yeah, good question. Look, I tell you what, it's a your question is a bit tongue-in-cheek, and I appreciate your comments and following the journey. And it's always nice to have people on the journey and hear where we've actually gone and deliver upon what we've actually said. Look, the issues for, and let's not call Telstra, let's say for telecommunications companies as a whole, their businesses have been developed over decades of selling new and interesting services, and what they do, they build a technology stack on top of technology on top of technology because they can't stop.
Yep.
And so the issue, what they have is, you know, their systems originally weren't in the deregulated marketplace. It was for your home phone. Then telex machines come away. Then they had pagers, and then they had the fax machines. And technology has been added on and added on and added on. So the issue is, if you have more than one service from a telco, invariably all of them would have different systems where your products are generated from, where your provisioning is coming from, where your view of a customer is coming from. That is where their issues are. On top of that, you've got to think...
You've got it, mate.
The billions of transactions. And as much as you'd like to think that we'd love to give them a solution, the other thing is what's happening with a lot of telcos at the moment now. There are some very, very large companies out there which provide end-to-end systems, which are big enterprise solutions. And the trouble is, enterprise solutions aren't necessary, and I don't have an enterprise solution. I have really best of breed, so we call them our diamonds. We've got, you know, 10 different diamonds. And so, you know, it's actually going to those companies and giving them the best of breeds rather than waiting for that single system. So I think 5G over the next 10 years will probably be a bit of a wake-up call to a number of telcos of how they're going to be addressing what will be another bunch of new products. If you just think of your mobile or phones, you don't even need a home phone connected anymore. Or if you look at your mobile phone, it's now more about getting to the internet and looking at your Hanson stock price rather than making phone calls. So I really, truly understand their problem. But we like where we are at the moment now. We are getting more and more deeply involved with our customers, are trying to navigate going forward. So hopefully, and I've got to be careful, Telstra's a very good customer of Hanson's and been a customer of about 30 years of Hanson, but we're not doing their billing now. We actually do other parts, you know, helping them bundle products together to actually offer you, but not actually rating them. So I'll take a tiny bit of the responsibility.
Good on you. Thanks for that, mate.
No worries. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the chat. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we're showing no further questions. I'll hand the conference back to Mr. Hanson.
I'd like to thank everyone for their time today. I've enjoyed the exchange and the questions, as we always do. You know, once again, that's a very bright future for Hanson, and I thank everyone for their interest, and for those shareholders, thank you for partnering with me. Thank you so much. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference today. Thanks for participating. You may now disconnect.